Oh, baby, I can make you feel good. Let me lay this good love on you. Yeah, yeah, I can make you feel good. Just say I really.
That's the voice of 90s pop star Kavanaugh, who shot to fame alongside artists such as the Spice Girls, Boyzone, NSYNC, winning awards and living the pop life dream. But all was not as it seemed. Alongside his huge success, Anthony Kavanaugh battled with addiction from a young age, leading to many broken relationships and eventually leading to homelessness. Now sober and rebuilding his life, he has written a book, Pop Scars. And while it includes names such as Janet Jackson, Victoria Beckham and Amy Winehouse, this is not a celebrity memoir, but an addiction memoir that looks at the dark side of the 90s pop music industry. And to tell us more, the man himself, Anthony Kavanaugh, a.k.a. Kavanaugh, joins me now. Hello, how are you?
Hi, Brendan. Can I just take you everywhere with me to introduce this book, please?
Yes.
Because you've just summed it up perfectly. Thank you.
Available for weddings, bar mitzvahs, funerals.
You name it. Supermarkets, if they want.
I bring my own scissors for cutting ribbon. Listen, lovely to talk to you. Because I remember your career. I remember everything about it. I remember you were on the cover of every magazine. You were the dreamboat of the time, for sure.
Yes.
So listen, your passion was for music at a very young age. But was being famous something you felt destined to be?
I think I craved the feeling of what I thought fame would give me. Now, whether that's because I wanted to escape or I don't know, but because the only thing I was good at was music, really. And I didn't want to be a music teacher. I'd look at the magazines like Smash Hits and stuff like that and think, you know, if only I could be on the cover of that. Because I used to buy it every 2 weeks. It was my Bible. I was obsessed with it. And then for it to happen was just unbelievable, really, you know.
So you got the record deal at 16 years of age. It happened so quickly, so young. You had a lot of fear around being a teenage heartthrob because at the time you also, in the book, very clearly tell you were questioning your own sexuality. Was that a hard time for you?
Do you know what, Brendan? I was so ambitious and I was also very naive. And I think there is a bit in the book where I say something like, you know, I don't know what cloud on cuckoo land I was floating on when I dreamed up this whole pop star fantasy, but I forgot the bit of how I handle that I'm gay, you know, because I was hiding my sexuality, even to everyone around me, even myself. So suddenly you're doing these interviews and the magazines are automatically asking you, who's your favourite girl band member, or who's your favorite, you know, so you start colluding in this lie almost, and then you've got to keep it going, right?
Yeah, because you're ambitious for your success, and that could be a big barrier at the time.
Absolutely. There was nobody my age out. You know, we know obviously lovely Stephen Gatelead, such a lovely, lovely man.
Lovely
man. You know, he was outed. You know, so it wasn't his choice. So there was nobody my age in the teen pop world that was out that was, you know, honest about like being gay. So I just had to keep quiet.
So that's a heavy load to bear. I'm an out gay. I was Ireland's first openly gay TV presenter, apparently, in 1999, 2000. Yeah,
wow.
Yeah. I'm a little older than you, so it was a little easier for me. And my mum's a hairdresser, so didn't really have a choice. But also, so that's a big, I know that pain, carrying that secret, but so publicly carrying that secret, that is a big, heavy load. And also, at the time, body image in the book is very, I was surprised to read that.
Really?
Yeah, because you always look so good. Maybe that was part of the problem because you had to look so good, yeah?
Well, yeah, I mean, because I wasn't in a boy band, and usually in a boy band you'd have the one that was maybe the tough one, you'd have the one that was maybe the shy one, you'd have the one that was a bit crazy, or, you know, and I was on my own, and that was my choice, and that's how it happened, and I was grateful to be doing it. But, yeah, I mean, I used to hide behind clothes, and I think because I was quite a chubby child, into my early teens, actually, it was only the summer before the pop started that I lost all the weight. So, mentally, I'm still this chubby teenager. But, yeah, I'm on the cover of these magazines, and, you know, you wear certain outfits that don't show certain things, and I thought my arms were too skinny. And so there's a lot of that body, I guess we didn't even have a name for it, did we then? But no. A bit of body dysmorphia maybe, or, you know.
And the use of the word skinny was acceptable, and naming and commenting on people's bodies back then was normal. People did it on television and magazines. You're managing these teenage insecurities, which probably without the pressure of the public eye are probably quite normal teenage things. I mean, they're struggles, but in the public eye, that just amplifies the whole thing, doesn't it?
Yeah, I think so. And I think maybe some kids my age might have gone to college and then on to uni. So you're around other people that are like you, maybe. Once you leave school, you start to mix with more, you know, all different types of people. So you might be somebody else a bit chubby, or there might be somebody else that's not, because we're a little older at that point, that can say that they're gay or you know, whatever. So it was a lot to deal with, but I was so grateful for it to be happening that I just had to try to forget about it, which obviously we know how I did that with drink, you know.
So despite all the personal struggles, the 1990s, though, for you was a very exciting time to be a pop star. I mean, you're moving in some incredible circles. You're signed to the same label as the Spice Girls.
Yes, yeah, we signed around the Virgin Records. We signed around the same time, and I used to follow them around the studio. I'd be with one producer, and I remember as I was going around, Brenda, these people would go, "Oh, have you heard about Spice? Like this new girl group called Spice?" And I'm like, because they were just called Spice at one point, not Spice Girls. And I'm thinking, who are these Spice? And then obviously I met them, and then not long after, they just blew up.
What's really striking about the book, and funny, we were chatting to Faye from Steps the other day, actually, is the grind, the machine of it all, the constant go, radio stations, under-18s gigs. It was a lot of hard work as well.
It was. You know, it says in the book, my only other job before that was McDonald's. And, you know, wherever you'd go, you'd have an itinerary. So that whoever was your looker after off, for want of a better word, they present you with it at the airport and go, right, this is what we're doing on this trip and we're doing this. And, you know, you would work very hard. And in those days, there was no internet or stuff like that. So you would literally be driving from radio station to radio station on the motorway, and then under-18s at night. And you're just getting this machine. But yeah,
you had to be there in person, because social media now has transformed how young artists promote themselves. How do you think you would have coped if social media had been around back then?
I don't know, because, you know, in one way we were kind of thrown to the wolves a little bit, but in another way we were shielded, or I can only talk about my experience, I was shielded from too much of, you know, for example, we have trolls now, right? Mm. And we know that trolls unfortunately do exist, but touch wood, I've been quite lucky at, well, not lucky, but they haven't gone to me on this, maybe because I'm revealing so much. I don't know what they could, apart from my blood type, I don't know what else I could reveal in the book, you know. But I don't know how that would have affected me. I don't think it would have affected me very well, to be honest, because, you know, you open up your app, you're clicking on, and immediately you're getting this dopamine rush of likes, and then you're getting comments. And I mean, I'm experiencing it now because I'm promoting something again after so long. But it is the Wild West on these places, right? Because they're strangers.
And I remember when you were top in the charts in the 90s, English people said Kavanaugh. They didn't say, and I always remember saying, it's Kavanaugh. That's definitely an Irish name. Irish name. And you mentioned Catholic guilt quite a few times in the book. It's something a lot of Irish people will definitely relate to. Did it really influence the way you saw yourself, the Catholic guilt?
I think so. I was an altar boy, and my mum was quite a strict Catholic. And obviously my dad's side are all from Dublin. And, you know, so they were brought up that way. And I did love the dramaticness of the church. Like, I liked the altar boy. It was almost like being on stage, really. And then it suddenly got a bit more appealing every Sunday. But get back to the Catholic guilt. Yeah, I think I carried a lot of guilt. And I think it's more about addiction. And I think I was addicted to fame too. But when the fame goes and people are on a payroll and they're no longer being paid, and I'm losing houses that I bought for my parents, and the guilt comes, and then there's the sexuality with the guilt. So there was a lot of Catholic guilt. Guilt in general, actually.
Guilt wrapped in shame and then, smothered.
Yes.
So, St. Anthony is a recurring figure in the book.
Yes.
Also, he's a big old saint, as you know, here. If you lose something, you find him. He was both a hindrance and a help to you throughout your life, helping you find things you thought you needed, but also things you didn't.
Wow. You know, you're the first person, Brendan, to touch on the St. Anthony thing.
Oh, really?
And I'm so grateful that you did, because it plays a big... There's a thread throughout the book. I mean, I pray for him. I pray for all sorts to him, don't I? I mean, at some points I'm praying for things that I shouldn't really have. But he's always stood by me, St. Anthony, you know. And I don't know about you, but I was told that you're supposed to thank him in advance. So when you say the prayer, you go, thank you,
St. Anthony. I didn't know that, but I read it in your book. I didn't know that.
Right. Yeah. Well, that's what I was told anyway. Yeah. But he never lets me down, St. Anne. I mean, he always comes through.
Namesake, literally.
Yeah, exactly.
You're 20 at the Brits in 1997. 20
yes.
years of age. That was,
wow.
That was the Ginger Spice. We don't even say Ginger Spice anymore.
Yeah.
In the infamous Union Jack dress. What was... You were there. You saw it.
Mad. Oh, my God. I mean, that was just crazy. And my looker-afterer, Ying, was not allowed to sit at the table because they put me on the top table, Virgin Records. So I'm on one table and on the next table is the Spice Girls and... It was the one where, you know, they did Who Do You Think You Are? And she's got the Union Jack on.
Yeah.
And that was just peak 90s pop.
It was.
I mean, you could not get more of an explosion of peak 90s that night.
That was a moment.
Yeah.
But you had a moment then. You won Smash Hits Best Male Artist Award.
Yes.
And that, you say in the book, you describe it as your moment. What was it like?
Mm. I think, you know, we see people win awards and get the praise and do all that, but I'm in my dressing room feeling fat in this Superman costume and I'm trying to fit into the outfit. And then, you know, the reality was I was on stage winning this award. It was amazing because I used to watch that show every year,
yeah.
You know. And in them days, people voted. They'd post the magazine slip.
Wow.
So they have to go to the post office and do it. So I remember getting the call saying, you've won.
Wow.
And I was like, oh my God. I knew I was performing, but I didn't know I'd won. So yeah, that was amazing.
I don't know, I'm sure you will have seen it, the Boyzone documentary, No Matter What,
yes.
on Sky. Massive hit here and in the UK, actually.
And in the UK, yeah.
Gave a great insight into the music industry at the time, the highs and the lows. And it can be a tricky industry. And certainly in the 90s, artist care wasn't at the forefront of music labels' minds. Do you look back now and think, why wasn't I helped more to deal with the seismic shift in your life and rise to fame?
Yeah, I mean, I did for a long time, Brendan, but I'm in recovery now. So what that means is I have to not carry resentments, right? Because resentments could lead me to a drink, right?
Right.
And if I drink, then I've got enough evidence to know that my life will probably burn to the ground again, right?
Yeah.
So I have to be very careful about looking back and having regrets and stuff like that. However, yes, I mean, there was no aftercare. There was no talk about mental health. I mean,
no.
I felt a certain way, which I now realise was depression, but you just get on with it, you know. And like you said before, it was a machine. So you're in the machine. It all looks great on paper, but you need to be making money for the record label that have give you a huge advance to earn back, okay? And so you're just on a roll and you just keep going. But all that stuff comes out sideways much later and that's when you have to kind of deal with it, right?
So in the book, you've won Smash It's Best Male and it's a huge moment for you. Then you're brought to Italy to record your second album. You're touring Southeast Asia. You're living the dream.
Yeah.
It's a fairy tale.
Yeah.
Did you think at that point it was going to last forever?
Yes, I did. Because what happened was when I went to Southeast Asia, the majority of the people in the charts out there, so the top 10, it was all American artists and me.
Wow.
And so I had the bright idea that, well, this must mean I must crack America. I could see the hits was drying up in England. I knew that they were possibly going to drop me. I mean, I write about that when I feel like I'm walking to the guillotine and they're about to tell me, well, in my eyes, my life was over at 21, you know.
That's when you got dropped?
That's when I got dropped. What happened was they went, it's very boring, I didn't go into it too much in the book, but they went over the option for the third album. So they actually paid me amount of money to leave the label.
Oh, wow.
So that's the money that I took with me and ran away to the States to try and make it out there, yeah.
So you moved to LA, you've been dropped by your record company, you have a bit of cash in the bank so you can survive for a while. And then what happens then? It was a lonely time, was it?
Do you know what? It was a wonderful time and it also had its dark moments because I took my slow burning addiction with me. Wherever you go, you take your head with you.
Yeah.
So you can change environment, you can change, they call it a geographical in the rooms of recovery. You can go somewhere else. But if I've not worked on myself, then these things are still going to pop up. So I didn't realise that once I got to Hollywood, which is where I lived, that everybody else in the town wants to be famous as well and make it. You know, and people much better looking, much more stuff on the CV than me. But in one way, it was good because I got to experience life without being known, because nobody had a clue who I was out there. So I got to be in my first relationship properly with another guy, and I got to, you know, experience life. But yeah, my addictions did come with me.
So things started off well, but after a few years, it started to become tough. Struggling to pay rent, the book tells us. What happened?
Well, like I said, the ambition ran parallel with being naive as well. So I'd bought my parents a house, and I carried on paying their mortgage whilst trying to... I just thought that it was going to happen. I thought, it's happened once for me, so it's going to happen again in America. Of course it is. So I had this slight delusion, and you start drinking on top of delusion, it's not going to end well, is it? So I came back nearly a decade later, and I had to start from scratch. And that's when I wanted to write, most importantly, about what happens to people, well, what happened to me after fame. Because we hear about people, we see them, and then they disappear. And you go, well, what happened to him? Oh, he must be still. But you don't always hear about why they disappeared or the choices that they made. Or I just kept chasing fame for so long, but it was a feeling I was chasing.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's quite profound. Did people around you know you were struggling? Did anybody reach out to you?
When you're the life and soul, and when you're hiding stuff very well, there'd be little blips. You know, you might be on a night out or a dinner, and you'd get told the next morning what you said or what you did, and that's when a blackout started happening. And it's the typical stories of every alcoholic, whatever your job is, whether you're a window cleaner or whatever, the alcohol starts turning, because I understand it to be a progressive thing. So the rock bottoms kept happening, but I kept bouncing back, and then there'd be another rock bottom, and then it's like, how far down do you need to go? I mean, I personally had to be stripped of everything for me to surrender to this and go, do you know what? I need to live. So one thing has to... I'm either going to go or the alcohol has to go. And that's when I started to try, with many failed attempts. If anyone's listening to this and they're struggling, you know, it doesn't always happen first time, but it did eventually stick for me, thank God, and now I get to talk about it, and hopefully, you know,
inspire.
I'd love it if,
yeah,
hope so. And that sounds a bit corny sometimes.
No, it doesn't.
But,
doesn't.
I hope so, because, you know, I wouldn't want people to be put off the book just because it's about 90s fame. It's about addiction, and one of those things was fame. Actually, I was addicted to fame.
Eventually, you go to rehab. And you're so honest in the book about your rehab journey. It's quite remarkable.
Yeah.
And you failed and you tried again. And now you're sober for over 2 years. Congratulations.
Three and a half,
three
actually.
And a half years.
Yeah. And this time it stuck. This is the first thing that I've actually done in sobriety.
Congratulations.
And it's great to be connecting to people like yourself, and, you know.
And you're a great writer, just to say. I really enjoyed
Thank
the read.
You.
Yeah, it's really good. And so did our Marion Keyes. She read it.
Oh, I couldn't believe that. That was so kind.
Yeah.
And you as well, yeah.
Marion, quote, "I devoured Pop Scars in two sittings. Anthony writes about his feelings so well, the sadness that dogged him as a child, the desire to be anyone other than himself, and his inability to cope with the shame and the loss when his career runs out of road." Marion Keyes. That's not an endorsement, nothing is. That's,
I mean, how cool is that?
Amazing.
That means the world to me, you know.
Yeah, we're very proud of her. She's a national treasure. We love her.
Yeah, she's wonderful.
How is life now? It sounds like it's good.
It is good. It's just for today. You know, I live a day at a time. I'm just glad that I didn't give up on this, because there was times when I nearly threw in the towel. My head was telling me, no one's going to be interested. You're not famous enough.
On
don't
the book.
Bother. Yeah.
Oh,
yeah,
I'm so glad
you
didn't. It's great.
I know. Thank you. And it's just connecting to people. And there's talk of a possible one-man show now. And there's talk
Brilliant
of
idea.
Maybe a TV situation, adapting it. So we'll see. But I'm just really pleased that people are connecting to it. And I couldn't have asked for more. So I'm really, really grateful.
Was it, just one last question. Was it a cathartic experience writing the book? Was it part of your journey to write
the book? Do you know what? I think it was. Because it was one thing writing it on your own in your little room, you know, in my little studio flat for months on end, and having deadlines and doing all this. There's that moment where it's out there. I remember the day it was released. I was like, oh my God, like, people are going to read it now. Yeah, I want connection, basically. I need to connect to others. And this is probably the best way I've ever done it, ever, really.
Yeah.
So
but just being your true, authentic self. There you go.
Yeah.
I've really enjoyed reading it. the book and thoroughly enjoyed chatting to you. Thank you so
much. Me too.
I just want to say, if anybody listening is affected by any of the issues related in this conversation, can find support, of course, on rt.ie/helplines. Kavanagh, you'll always be Kavanagh to me, Anthony Kavanagh.
Yeah.
Great to chat to you. And
thank you.
Our best of luck with the book. Pop Scars, as I said, by Anthony Kavanagh, is out now in all good bookshops. Thank you so much. Bye-bye.
Thank you. Bye-bye.